Let me do a sound check. That sounds better. Greg, do you mind turning on that television? That way I won't have to look back so much. Good morning. It's good to see everyone here. Looks like we sort of have a sparse, scattered audience. Middle section is really lean right now, but I'm sure that'll change. We have several visitors with us. We're glad to have you with us particularly. If you have any question about what we do or teach, how we do things, certainly we would welcome that. This quarter, we have an emphasis on Bible, geography, and history. Trent showed a lot of interesting slides last week. Last Wednesday night, and I wasn't able to be here last Sunday. But we're trying to build, really, your awareness of geography and the geopolitical situations that occurred in the Bible, so that when we go into our detailed study, over the next several years, we're going to be looking at it in detail, and we want to be able to build your awareness and help lay a foundation for that study when it begins. Today we're going to be starting a two-class cycle of emphasis on the Bible periods. Of course, Tim introduced those a couple of weeks ago, I guess it was. We're going to go in a little more detail now about that. So have a lot of material. We're covered in two class sessions. Again, our intent is to help lay that foundation for what we'll be studying beginning the next quarter in November as we go into more detail about the Bible story. And I'm drifting in and out, Greg. I don't know if it's because of the way I'm moving. Do I need to move it to a better spot? Greg's got a lot going on this morning, looks like. We've had several problems back there computer-wise, so I think we'll be good now. So let's go right on into our story. The Bible, in the very beginning, as you, I'm probably sure, know, in the beginning, God. The writer presumes the reader's belief in God, but God gives plenty of evidence for why he does exist. The design, operation, the arrangement, the order of the universe argues for a creator. In fact, it is many of astronomers who study space and study science readily admit, even those who may not even believe in God, readily admit that the universe appears to be finely tuned for life, and indeed it is. Of course, we understand that because God designed it that way. But the Bible also contains many prophecies that have been fulfilled over the ages. That is a strong argument for the existence of God. And the accuracy and the harmony contained in the Bible spread out over many, many years, hundreds of years, really thousands of years, over different writers, all contain that one complete message. God is presented in the Bible as being everywhere, present everywhere, omnipresent. Sometimes we use that term. But he's also presented as all-powerful, all-knowledgeable, knowing all things, with unlimited power. He is a spiritual being and a force that is described as holy and loving as well. He is the force for good in all the world, all the universe. He is the force for good amidst other forces of darkness and evil, things we don't know a whole lot about. We know about Satan and his angels, but we have indications from Scripture that there are other spiritual forces at work in the universe that are counter to God and have been working against God. We can see that from different passages, different books. Well, our emphasis, and it will be continue to be our emphasis over the next several years, the Bible presents one complete, unified story. A lot of times over the years we've studied the Bible and we've picked out a book here, and we study that and learned a lot about that and benefited from it. And we've picked out another book, you know, let's go study Revelation. Let's go study Mark. And those are all good. But a lot of times we haven't really brought all those together and studied it in a harmonious, unified way. And that will be our emphasis in both this quarter and particularly as we go forward. We choose to divide the Bible story into 17 distinct periods. There's nothing magical or inspired about that. But it does help us organize the information and understand the story and the flow of events, right? So we have been using that. I think Tim introduced us to that a couple of weeks ago. Let's just start talking about them now. Did everybody see the chart? I'm up here yesterday. As you get further back, depending on how good your eyes are, but I can get you the charts if you'd like. So let's just go over them now. Before the flood, and you can say them with me. Before the flood, flood, scattering of the people, patriarchs, Exodus, wandering in the wilderness, invasion and conquest, judges, united kingdom, divided kingdom, Judah alone, captivity, and return from captivity. Let's stop right there. That would encompass the Old Testament, right? What comes after the Old Testament? I hear mixed answers. New Testament does come after the Old Testament, but there is a period of time between the Testaments. I think it's 400 years, if my memory's correct. I'm getting a head nod back there. I knew that, but I just wanted confirmation. That is between the Old and New Testament, right? A period of time. But there were events going on in the world that actually had been prophesied in the Old Testament that occur in the years of silence, particularly the increase of the kingdom under Alexander the Great and his successors. That was actually prophesied in the Bible, right? So there are things that are going on, and the world becomes ready, it seems, for Christ to appear. What kingdom did Christ appear? In what world kingdom? What was the main dominant power at that time? Rome, the Roman Empire. We'll say a little bit more about that as we continue to study this session. Or maybe next session. So let's continue here. We have years of silence, life of Christ, early church, and letters to Christians, or letters to the Christians, as is sometimes said. So you can see the division of the books as we've aligned them against these periods, right? All right, let's move on. Well, God, I mean, a lot of times we'll start with creation, and that's fine. But God actually existed before creation, did he not? He is an eternal being. He exists outside of time. He is not affected by time. We kind of have a hard time wrapping our heads around that, don't we? Well, how can that be? Everything we've ever known and everything we've ever thought about had a finite beginning and end, whereas God is not limited in that way. Well, we learn from passages that God determined that he would create man, but what did he also foresee about man? I couldn't quite hear it. Yeah, man would need a redeemer because man would not live sinlessly, and that would separate him from God. He would need a redeemer. There would be a means or a need or a system in which God or man could be reconciled to God. And of course, that involved that redeemer. He foresaw that man would need that, and he planned even before the world was created that faith in Christ would be the means to reconcile man with. Well, now we come to creation. The Bible shows, the Bible indicates that God created the world in 6 days. A lot of people have a lot of questions about it. You know what it says. Oh, how Moses explained it a little later on. In 6 days, he created the heavens and the earth. So we are given that information to go by. We may not understand all how that worked or what powers it took to accomplish that. But that is what it says, and I think that's what we're bound to believe, right? We see the heavens and the earth are created. God creates light. He creates a firmament that is an atmosphere separated from the waters of the world. Seas and dry land are created. Plants and trees are then created. And I'm having to look at that. I had to really have to really look at my charts back on there because I can't remember all this out of my head. So it just seems like I have a great memory. I really don't. I'm really reading. But I cheated a little bit during the still have to look a little bit. So you'll notice to the right, to the left side, we've got all the periods listed with the one we're studying at the time listed in bold. I guess that's obvious, but just wanted to point that out. And all of our charts will have that, or most of them will. So then he creates aquatic sun, moon, and stars, the aquatic animals and birds. Again, there are different days in which these occur. Then he creates land, animals, and mankind, man and woman. What's significant or what's different about men and women compared to animals? They have a soul created in God's image. Exactly. They are created in the image of God. Man is created as an intelligent being. Animals have intelligence. Some have more than others. Some monkeys have incredible intelligence, right? So there's a level of intelligence, but there is a difference of intelligence associated with man. He has the ability to choose good and evil, and we see that very early on in the story. He is given laws by God and expectations about how to live as they lived in the Garden of Eden. We'll talk about that in a minute. And he's given dominion over the animals. Dominion. That is, God, man, has the ability to utilize animals, to tame animals for his needs. He has the given dominion in that and probably other senses as well. Well, we have Adam and Eve in the garden. That is the very first part of our introduction to mankind. And I realize, I don't know how well you can see that. That's a brown-headed man-headed wife. And my son and daughter-in-law were not the models for that, as you might think, but they were not. I just happened to find them. I had a hard time finding free images where people had enough, where the pictures or the drawings had enough clothes on. But I was able to find a few. So Adam and Eve lived in the garden, and they were told to keep the Garden of Eden. Well, they were told that there was a particular tree that they could not eat of. What was that? Tree of knowledge of good and evil. Did it have apples on it or oranges? We don't know. Did it have red fruit? I don't know. I put red in the picture, but I really don't know. Nobody really knows. Everybody always thinks it's an apple, but the Bible never tells us, right? Eve was, Lori, when she looked at these, she told me she needed to put a snake in that picture, and I forgot to do it. And I'm not sure the snake was in the form of a snake as it is now, at least not initially, when he tempted Eve. But he tempted Eve. Did God indeed say you couldn't eat of all the trees of the garden? And he tempted Eve. She looked at that fruit. She thought about the reasons behind why it might be good to have that fruit, and she took of that fruit. What'd she do with it? Yeah, she gave it to Adam. What'd he do? He ate of it too. First sin occurred. What were the consequences of that? They're driven out of the garden, made to work. Physical death, you know, at that point they were separated from God, and then that point they began to die as humans. They were not going to live forever after that point. Well, they had two children, Cain and Abel. God gave commands to Cain and Abel, apparently, regarding sacrifices, or at least he laid down some expectations. Cain offered what? Yeah, some of the fruit of the ground, some of his produce, he offered that. What did Abel provide? Animal sacrifice. God had respect for Abel's, but he did not have respect for Cain's, which indicates that there had to have been some expectation given to the both for what they should offer. Cain was upset about that, and we see later on, what did Cain do one day? Killed Abel. First murder occurred. Genesis 5, and then we see people beginning to populate the earth at this point, right? There was another child given, at least one more, many others actually, to Adam and Eve. Seth is given. But we see the genealogy, and there's emphasis on the genealogies, and we'll learn the importance of that later, because what does this actually have an impact on about who comes later? Yeah, Christ, the genealogy of Christ. So we're seeing that laid out in the Scriptures. Of course, it begins with Adam. Adam, Seth, Enos, Canaan, and I forgot to check the spelling on one of those. Mahaliel, Jared, Enoch, Methuselah, Lamech, Noah. And yes, I did look at them, but I think I can still remember most of those from when we studied them years ago. Noah had three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, and we will see relatively soon there's something special about Shem's descendants. Again, that lineage of Christ will continue through Shem. What's significant about Enoch? He did not die. He walked with God, and God did what? Took him. What was significant about Methuselah? Oldest recorded man in history, 969 years. If you add some of the numbers with respect to the flood and the lives of the people that lived, what do we know about the year? What do we know about Methuselah's death, about when it occurred? Either in the flood or the year preceding the flood. If you add those numbers up, he did not live past the flood. But he may have died just prior to it. So that's an interesting point as well. Methuselah, 969 years. Well, the flood occurred. Hope you can see that picture. It's an image I grabbed, again, off the internet. Man becomes corrupt. Sometimes if you have time and you're studying this account, look at how many times it talks about violence. Man becomes violent, corrupt, and wicked. God regrets that he makes man, and he determines that he's going to destroy the world with a global flood. There are actually people who question, well, is it really a global flood? What would be the significance of the promise not to do it again if it were not a global flood? Because local floods happen all the time, right? So it was a global flood. The artist here even draws a picture of people at some mountaintop at the top, which did occur, I think it did say, right? He decides to destroy the world. But Noah is a just man and finds grace in the eyes of God. There was something different about Noah. So God makes a covenant with him and instructs him to do what? Build an ark. Did he give him specifications about how to do that? Yeah, he told him certain dimensions. We don't know everything about it. And maybe he had some liberty to do some things that weren't specified necessarily, but God gave him certain instructions about what he expected of it, right? Certain, the width and the length and the height, a door and a window. He's to take animals in. Usually we think just of two, a pair of male and female of the animals, but of the clean animals, seven pairs, right? So they were to take them into the ark. And the flood occurs. How many people survived the flood? Eight. Noah, his wife, his three sons, and their wives. What was Noah's wife's name? Joan of Arc? No, we don't know. But I saw that yesterday, so I thought that was kind of funny. It's not Joan of Arc. Or if it was, we don't know about it, right? So, eight people survived the flood. God makes a covenant with Noah after this, right? Up to this point, they were only eating herbs and plants. But now, they're allowed to eat meat, right? Everything, every animal is available for food. But the eating of blood is prohibited. What's significant about that? I don't know if you know what I'm looking for here, relative to the New Testament. Yeah, that law was continued, and it continues even today. It's part of the New Testament law. We're prohibited from eating blood. You look at that sometime when you have time, and just give God's reasons for that, and God saying, I will require it. I believe, even on the basis of the animal, that God sees that as something that is not good, eating the life blood of another being. God promises never to destroy the earth again. God institutes capital punishment for the sin of murder. Realize that didn't happen to Cain, did it? He had some sort of mark of identification that was placed on him so people would know not to kill him, but he was not executed because he killed Abel. Now we see that principle being allowed now, right? God endorses that, capital punishment for murder. He promises never to destroy the earth with a flood again. You think about if you're Noah or any of his family, or maybe those that had heard them talk about that flood, you know, they could understand when rain started after this point that they didn't have to worry about a flood occurring again, did they? Right? That they had that confidence that that's not going to happen again. And they could see that and they think about that every time they look at that rainbow. And hopefully that's what we do too as well, right? Well, we have the story of Noah's drunkenness. I believe it says he planted a vineyard and drank of the wine of the vineyard. And he became drunk. He became uncovered in a state of nakedness. One of his sons looks on him in some type of way, looks at his nakedness that implies some sort of sexual connotation to it, I believe. And he tells his brothers about it. Ham, who is the father of Canaan, is cursed for doing this. What do the other two brothers do? Shem and Japheth. Yeah, they walk behind with a cover, not making sure they don't look at him, they cover him up as a result of that. Well, the people are primarily living in the plain of Shinar. We'll have a map or two here in a minute that'll show that. I hope you can see that depiction there. Of course, we don't know what the Tower of Babel looked like. But the people were all living in one area, in one place, and were of one mind and of one goal. And God did not see that as good. And he decided to do what? Scattered their language. Well, he scattered them, but how did he do it? Yeah, confusing their language. Confusing their language. They propose to build this city. God confuses their language. They cease building and they go to different places. We see the table of nations there in Genesis, the genealogy of Shem. Again, there's something special about Shem's descendants we can see very early on. Hopefully you can see here this map. We have Shem, the descendants of Shem, the descendants of Ham, descendants of Japheth. Japheth tended to go north, then maybe some a little over towards Europe. Many of us, being Caucasians, would be descendants of Japheth, it's believed. Though there's been lots of mixing, right? We can't really tell that. But we are probably predominantly of the original of Jacob. Ham's descendants went down into Africa. And of course, Shem's in this area here of Arabia. Well, we come to another period of time. The patriarchs. What's patriarch mean? Father leader, I think. I think there's a better definition. I couldn't remember what it was. But God calls Abraham to leave Ur of the Chaldees, which is right about there. I hope you can see that. Where am I? Right in there. Travels up the Fertile Crescent and down and moves down into the area of Canaan down in here. God promises three things to Abram. What are they? Three distinct words we can help remember it by. Land, nation, and seed. I'm going to give you the land of Canaan. I'll make of you a great nation. I'll bless all nations through your seed. Ultimately, how is that fulfilled? Through Christ, exactly. Because all nations of the earth have the ability to be reconciled to God and saved eternally through Christ. Well, Abraham and Sarah have Isaac in their old age. Isaac and Rebekah have Jacob and Esau. Jacob is chosen even before they were born, before they even did anything. I think God, it says, makes that choice that promise would be fulfilled through him. He has 12 sons. They live in the land of Canaan. I'll have another map here in a second. Joseph. One of his younger sons actually is taken and sold by his brothers. Where does he wind up? In Egypt. and actually rises to power in the midst of a famine. And of course, years later, they reunited with his family, and the family moves down into Egypt. Just look at our chart here. So they're somewhere up in here. I don't know if we know exactly where Jacob's family was, but they Joseph winds up in Egypt. Brothers go down in the midst of a famine to buy food in Egypt. Joseph is in charge of that, and they ultimately move to where in Egypt? The land of Goshen, an area that was suitable for raising herds, right? Which is what this family did. You can see there's a lot of activity associated with the Fertile Crescent. It is believed that the Garden of Eden is somewhere there. We have the Tigris and Euphrates River. So those are still identified even today. We don't know if the courses were the same today as they were years and years ago, particularly before the flood. But the Garden of Eden would have been in this region as well, based on that description. But again, a lot of activity along the Fertile Crescent. And of course, a lot of activity will be here as we go forward. Well, Jacob's family multiplies in Egypt, and in 400 years, they become a large people. How much time do I have? 11. I got to hustle. So Egypt tries to curtail their growth. Egypt sees them as a threat. They put them into slavery. They try to kill their babies. But that does not stop Moses from being born. He is actually born and adopted by Pharaoh's daughter. He grows up as an Egyptian in a sense. But he still remembers who he is, and one day he tries to intervene in a fight between an Egyptian and an Israelite. He kills the Egyptian and he flees Egypt. Stays 40 years, I believe, in the wilderness, marries, has children. But God appears to Moses at the burning bush, and Moses is initially reluctant, but again finally agrees and takes the message, "Let my people go," from God. Does Pharaoh listen? He does eventually, but not at first, right? 10 plagues were sent. He finally agrees. Well, they leave Egypt. They cross the Red Sea. This is somebody's idea of what that might have initially looked at as the waters were being pushed back. Realize they did eventually walk on dry land, it says. God makes a covenant with Israel. They will be his. He will be their God. They will be his people. They agree to this covenant. God feeds them with manna. He gives them the Ten Commandments, the remainder of the law of Moses. The law of Moses is instituted. They build the tabernacle per the directions and specifications from God. The priesthood, according to the line of Aaron, is established. They arrive at Kadesh Barnea and send 12 spies into the land of Canaan. How'd that go? Went good for two of them. What about the remaining 10? We can't take this land. We're like grasshoppers compared to these people. Joshua and Caleb says, it's a tough land, but we can take it with God's help. Well, the people listen to the 10 spies, and they're forced to go into wandering in the wilderness, or continue wandering in the wilderness for a total of 40 years. There are lots of events that happen there. The generation of people over the age of 20 all died. We have the story of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram, who questioned Moses' authority. Kind of a follow-on to that is the budding of Aaron's rod. As it's shown, as they take rods from each tribe, Aaron's rod budded and actually produced almonds, indicated that God had chosen him in terms of the priesthood. We have the death of Miriam. And then Moses and Aaron in striking the rock, instead of speaking to the rock as God had told them to do. And the result of that was that Moses would not enter, and of course Aaron too, would not enter into the promised land. Edomites refused passage to Israel. Aaron eventually dies. They have a plague of fiery serpents. Again, I'm hitting you with a lot of stories. Our emphasis is to introduce you to these stories, get your basic knowledge there of where things are in each period, so that when we really study detail-wise, you'll really have a good foundation. We have the story of Balaam and Balak. Balak is trying to get Balaam to curse the people of Israel. He's not allowed to do that by God, but he advises, apparently, Balak to send Midianite women over. The men commit fornication with them. And, of course, God has to punish them for that. But he ultimately takes vengeance on Midian as well. Deuteronomy records the speeches of Moses leading up to his death. And then Joshua is the new leader. If you'll notice in green, I've kind of got major characters of our story. So Joshua leads the people. They eventually start eating the produce of the land. They defeat Sihon, king of the Amorite king. They defeat Og, king of Bashan. And eventually, we move into the period of the invasion and conquest. They have the central campaign, the northern campaign, southern campaign, and the northern campaign as they're working through this land. This is God's land, but they had to work for it, right? God had given it to them, but they still had to take it. There's still things they had to do to take advantage of what God offered them. There's probably a story, a principle in there we could apply today, right? The Transjordanic tribes, these were tribes were given land initially across on the other side of the Jordan, the east side of the Jordan. They were given that land initially, but they still had to fight and help their other brothers fight. And they finally get to go back home. We have the speeches of Joshua. And then we come to the period of the judges. And there's a picture of Samson pushing on those columns. I probably would have got a better picture for what he's got on too. I didn't think about it when I got it. So I don't think it's terribly bad, but anyway. We have a regular cycle of sin. Sin followed by oppression from enemies, the cry to God for help. God sends up a deliverer, and then repentance. The word judge is really used a little differently than we use it today. We think of it in a legal judicial sense as an arbiter who decides cases, right, or oversees a trial. It's really used in the biblical sense here as a deliverer. So we have 15 judges: Othniel, Ehud, Shamgar, Deborah, Gideon, Abimelech, Tola, Jair, Jephthah, Ibzan, Elon, Abdon, Samson, Eli, and Samuel. And yes, I am reading from the back. Though I bet there's, not bet, but I suspect there are people here who could probably rattle them off without looking. Lots of good stories, lots of interesting stories, all filled within these characters and events. We're just kind of touching the surface, right? Well, actually, people kind of get, what do they ask God for through Samuel? What do they go to Samuel with? And what do they say they want? We want a king. Why do they want a king? We want to be like the other nations. They got kings. Why can't we have a king? Well, God had actually foresaw that, right? So they asked God for a king. And we begin the period of the United Kingdom. Three kings in the United Kingdom. Saul, in each reigned 40 years. We initially, the first king was Saul. He was very humble at first. But he disobeys God and is ultimately rejected, is he not? And God decides to, he doesn't even have what we would call a dynasty. He rules himself, and then the family changes over to David. His jealousy of David really had a big impact on him and really led to his ruin. And then David, a man after God's own heart, who was a great, kind of an interesting combination of people, of one person. He's a psalmist, someone we would associate with be more of a tender type of person. And he's a great military leader. And that great military side of him is what really caused Saul to be so jealous of him. But he had one great sin that affected his life for the remainder of his life. And that was with Bathsheba. He committed adultery with her, even had a child with her. He arranged for the murder of his wife so he could take her and try to cover that up, but he did not cover it up with God. and it led ultimately, really, to his downfall in many ways. Not ultimately, but just the turmoil that occurred as a result of that continued for a long time. He was followed by Solomon. Solomon asked for what? Wisdom, and wow, did he get wisdom. The fame of his wisdom spread well over the world. He's allowed to build the temple. But what was his ultimate downfall? Yeah, his unfaithfulness with foreign women, many wives. He accumulated many wives, and they turned his heart. Well, we enter another period after the Solomon's death. The people come to his son Rehoboam and said, "Hey, lighten things up for us. Your father worked us very hard. How about lighten it up for us?" He said, "Well, all right, I'll come back and I'll give you my answer." And he consulted different advisors. He followed the young advisors who said, "Make it harder. You think this was hard? You think my dad was hard? What do you see me?" Is kind of the way he said it. That was it for them. And led by Jeroboam, they split the kingdom. We're already told this was going to happen, right? Because of Solomon's unfaithfulness, God had decided to tear away the kingdom. So we see this occurring now. And there's 200 years where we have the kingdom of Israel and the kingdom of Judah. Israel in the north, Judah in the south. Jeroboam was really concerned about people going down in Jerusalem and worshiping. What was he afraid they might do? Yeah, go back to Judah. So he established these golden calves. Again, somebody's idea of what that might have looked like. Where did he put those golden calves? Dan and Bethel. And they were to utilize those as a place to go worship. And that had lasting impacts in terms of their idolatry. And there are several different dynasties, family lines. They had no faithful kings in Israel at all as a result of this. Judah was a little better. David's dynasty remained intact. There were varying degrees of faithfulness and unfaithfulness in terms of the kings. God is at this time sending prophets to warn the people, to give people's messages about how they were doing and what they were to expect and to repent. And then only Judah remains after Israel is defeated and taken by Assyria. And basically the people, for the most part, assimilated into Assyrian culture and became the people known as the Samaritans that we read about in the Bible, that the Jews hated so. But Judah was unfaithful to God, and God punishes Judah with captivity. There were two main prophets of this period, Daniel and Ezekiel. They were both taken captive. Jerusalem is destroyed in 586. We have the dreams of Nebuchadnezzar. Of course, Babylon is the one that took captivity of the people of Judah, followed by the Medo-Persians. But God showed to Nebuchadnezzar four world empires, and during the fourth, we mentioned this a little earlier, Rome, ultimately, as we learn, God will raise His kingdom that will last forever, the kingdom of Christ. That captivity lasted 70 years. And that's about where I wanted to get today. Any questions? I didn't give you a lot of time to talk. It's just a lot of material to cover in two class sessions, but we just wanted to kind of give you a taste of what to expect as we go forward. We're going to try to continue. We're going to be continuing to emphasize the geography and history. The Bible is built a lot upon different people in different places. And the thing that separates the Bible from other religious documents is that it is accurate in terms of its biblical history, its world history. It is regarded as accurate because it is. Other religious books can't claim what the Bible can claim. All right, thank you very much. Lord willing, we'll be back to continue on Wednesday. I had those backup slides in case I finished early and I could go over some other stuff. So.